From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Trips organized by groups in the United States to the island of Cuba have been very rare, but members of the Learning and Retirement Program at UW-La Crosse will be making a trip next year, thanks in large part to UW-La Crosse Professor Emeritus of Education, Bert Altman, who waded through the paperwork to make it possible. I talked with Altman and his wife Norma Altman about the Cuba trip and their involvement in the Learning and Retirement Program.
I wanted to go to Cuba in 2002, and Elder Hostel at the time had a tour to Cuba, but you had to travel from Cancun. And I was told that there was 500 people on the waiting list to go to Cuba. And I figured if Elder Hostel could do it, if I did the research, I ought to be able to do it too. Well, lo and behold, I was able to take a group from Learning and Retirement in 2002 to Cuba, and that started me on a long career of taking senior citizens on trips to exotic places. So after Cuba, we went to Vietnam. From Vietnam, the group the following year went to Tanzania on safari, and that was a highlight because we went over the Serengeti in a balloon. And then 3 years ago, we went to India. And in 2009, I tried to get a license to go to Cuba, and I was turned down, but they told me why, and I worked on it from 2009 to 2011 and got the license.
And each of these trips that you go on, they're educational trips. It's not just going and relaxing at the beach.
It's my feeling that we are not engaged in travel as tourists. We're engaged as learners, and that means we have a different focus. Oh, sure, when we travel, we see the sights.
And we have a good time.
But, for example, in Cuba, we visit hospitals, we visit schools. We're visiting the school where Fidel Castro went in Santiago. We meet with people. We're meeting with a group from the Federation of Women, which was responsible for raising the literacy rates in Cuba. We're meeting with people from the Ludwig Foundation, which is an organization that brings artists together. And then we meet with the people from the International Interest Center. Yeah, we'll visit the Bay of Pigs and do things of that sort. But essentially, it's an educational tour.
So why do you think it's so important for retired people to continue learning?
We hear about people going to exercise, older people exercising, watching their diet, getting checkups and so forth. But now it seems we're getting as much information about the importance of keeping your mind alert, not just to give you a better life, but actually to promote better health. And it's true. It really is. It's a wonderful way to keep your mind active and to keep learning and to keep out of trouble.
I call it a senility check to see if we still have it. And so with that in mind, I constantly keep myself current and interested. I feel better.
And have you created lasting friendships through Learning and Retirement?
Oh, yes, very definitely. It's a relatively small, not small group, it's about 200 people. But you have common interests, so you're involved in the same activities. You see the same people in courses year after year. And we do have some social events, and you see them there. You go on trips together, and that makes for good friendships.
And the other thing about it is the whole purpose and focus of the program is to provide people with new awarenesses in a variety of arenas. And what we attempt to do is determine from the membership what courses we would offer. So, for example, this fall we're going to offer a course on state and local current affairs because it's such a pertinent issue today. We offer courses in all areas of learning, science, social sciences, the humanities. We have courses this summer. There's a group going up to Winona to the Shakespeare Festival. So there are all variety of courses.
I'm wondering if you can talk about the class structure in these different courses.
The classes are all taught by volunteers. A lot of the people, the instructors are people from the university, but a large number are from the community, from Viterbo, WTC. We have anyone who has something worthwhile to offer, and they enjoy teaching. They ask us if they can teach for us because you have an audience that wants to be there, and they enjoy teaching adults. The classes run about 2 hours a week. So there's one two-hour class a week for about 4 weeks. Classes are always in the morning and the afternoon because people our age generally don't like to drive at night. Although I don't want to stress that it's people our age only because there is no minimum or maximum age limit, and you don't have to be retired. Basically, it is retired people because of the time that it's offered. Most people are working during those hours. But the class stays young because they're active. And there are, of course, no tests, no grades, no homework, and it's a very pleasant way to learn something.
Can you talk about your experience, Bert, in teaching a learning and retirement class and then also being a student in one?
Well, my experience as an instructor in the course, I taught courses on issues in education, and I taught a course on human relations, but not human relations in the touchy-feely sense of the term, but more or less in terms of dealing with minorities and issues related to sexism and homophobia and issues of that sort. And as an instructor, it was so much fun because the class was so eager, and I was dealing with my peers rather than with young people. And so in some ways, it was more challenging because they wouldn't let me get away with anything, and they didn't care if the questions or what we were talking about was going to be on the test.
And Norma, can you talk about some classes that you've taken?
Yes, I think part of the joy of these classes is that these are courses that the people have asked for. So you're going to a class because you want to take a course in that. For example, one course I took was a course in football football for dummies. And it was taught by the former coach, Herring. And it was an absolutely fantastic course. I mean, it was funny, but we did learn a little bit about football. But it started very basic with such questions from one woman as, what does it mean go forward? Do you throw the ball? Do you have to have the ball to make? I mean, this is where many of us were when we started the class.
So it made you appreciate Packer games more, I'm assuming?
at least I know what they're doing now, a little bit of what they're doing now. But these courses are spread over such a large field of information. There were courses in flower arranging, courses in Broadway musicals, courses on history, the Civil War. I'd like to mention a few courses that are coming up this fall. There's going to be a course on summer storms and global warming. Some of you have heard the tremendous number of storms that we've had during the past year. And then we're having one on current issues in state and federal government. And that's going to be taught by our former mayor, John Menninger. We're having another course on international women. There is a large group of women living in La Crosse who are from other countries. They're here for a period of time generally. Either they are in school, the husbands are in school, or they're here for a job. And the course is aimed at how these women adjust, what adjustments need to be made, and so forth. Then there's one on voluntary simplicity. This is apparently a new movement, a new practice, and it's become a very popular book. And I don't fully understand what voluntary simplicity is.
Maybe you have to take the class.
But this is why one takes the class. That's right.
One of the courses that I suggested we take and offer is one Spanish for tourists, because we're going to Cuba. And when we did this in 2002, we offered a similar course. And it was very popular because so much of our travel is to Mexico and the Caribbean and Latin and Central America, that unlike academic course in Spanish, this is how to say, where is the washroom? Yeah. Where is the bus stop? Questions and answers such as that.
What is this food?
That's right. What are we eating?
How to read the name of a street so you can ask someone.
How do you say something
it?
Costs too much, or is how much does it cost?
Yeah, sure.
So we have a former high school teacher who's volunteered to teach this. Yeah. No one gets paid.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are Bert and Norma Altman. Bert is a professor emeritus of education from UW-La Crosse. He's the former president of Learning in Retirement and is currently on the curriculum committee. Norma is a member also of Learning in Retirement, and she is on the promotion and membership committee. I want to talk about this upcoming trip to Cuba. You've received quite a bit of attention for it. The New York Times quoted you, Bert, in an article on the trip. You're going in April for 10 days. Why did you want to take people back to Cuba?
Well, for the most part, it was such a great learning experience for us in the first time we went. And for very selfish reasons, I wanted to see how Cuba changed, because Cuba is becoming much more capitalistic today. Democratic, I don't know. I'll find out when we go there. But it is becoming capitalistic, meaning more private businesses are being permitted to operate. So that's a basic reason. And the trip is very educational in the sense, while we do visit the museums and places of interest, such as the Bay of Pigs and go to Havana, we also meet with people from the university there. We visit hospitals. We visit elementary and secondary schools. This year, we're going to spend some time in a library. We meet with certain action groups. We're meeting with the Federation of Women in Cuba, and this is a group that's responsible for dealing with literacy. And Cuba boasts of having high literacy in the country, and these women were responsible for it. Their organization was. We're also going to visit the Ludwig Foundation. This is an agency, an international group that focuses relationships among artists around the world. And we go to the United States Information Center and learn about the issues that they're faced with. And the Information Center is kind of interesting because it's in the former U.S. Embassy. So we try to mix learning with travel. We feel, and it's always been my feeling, that if we're going to do the same thing that a travel agent does, then they don't need us. We have to offer something different for learning in retirement.
And one of the reasons that you were granted permission through the federal government to go on this is because learning is a part of the trip. I know President Barack Obama kind of loosened the policy since he's been in office, granting more people-to-people license. So can you talk about the process of
that? You know, there's a trickle-down effect. The people-to-people license is what we qualified for. While the president spoke of this in glowing terms, the issues that are related to it are very stringent. In other words, it's taken me over a year and a half to get the document together in the proper order so that we could be issued the license. And to my surprise, I was told that we were only one of nine institutions in the United States that got it. That's why it got so much visibility. But I turned the application into a labor of love to work on it, and that's how it came about. It has to be non-tourist oriented. We do not spend any time at any tourist attractions. By that, I mean we don't go to any of the resort areas, and Cuba has a lot of them. Cuba is the third largest tourist destination in the Caribbean, after Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. For the listeners, the reason being, people from around the world go to Cuba, from Western Europe, from Latin America. It's just we can't go. Canadians flock there because the weather is so ideal.
You will be able to see every car you have ever owned for your entire life driving down the streets in Cuba. They're marvelous mechanics. When they can't fix a part, they manufacture the part. And it's interesting to see your 1957 Plymouth going down the street.
The Cubans, from our experience, and it's difficult to generalize from very limited observations, but the Cubans are very, very friendly. They're very eager to meet Americans, and they're very open. Yes, indeed, when you see Havana, it looks in rubble. It doesn't meet any American standards. And when I asked about that, the answer I received from several Cubans who live in Havana was, when we have a choice between painting our house and putting food on our table, we opt for food on the table, which makes sense. But it's very friendly and it's very safe.
What are your thoughts on current U.S. policy there? Do you see Cuba as a threat?
I can't imagine that Cuba would be a threat to the United States. And I'm glad to see that it's opening up. And everyone we talk to, at least among our acquaintances, seem to feel the same way.
Yeah, the Cubans really want to be friendly with the governments. The people are already friendly. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be getting on boats and coming over here illegally. But it's the governments that are the problems.
So I'm wondering if you can talk about some of your favorite aspects of visiting Cuba. What is it? Is it the food? I mean, obviously you're learning so much and you're interacting with people.
The people are the probably the most joyous part of the trip. They're very friendly. They seem to like Americans very, very much. And it's wonderful to talk to them and get some good insights. We visited a nursing home, for example. One of the residents came to speak to me, and she spoke rather good English. And she said, "Isn't this beautiful?" Well, the nursing home was very stark, very simple, but very clean and very practical. And she said, "Look at this beautiful place that I live. And if it weren't for Fidel Castro, I would be dead now." So it's interesting. You do get an output of emotions when you travel to these various places.
The thing that impressed me most was the music. There's music everywhere. I mean, there's music in the streets. There's music in every restaurant you go into. There's a little combo playing in the corner. And when we visited a school, the kids were, preschoolers were all learning to dance, and they were singing. And it just was a reflection of the culture. And people who are that musical, I find it hard to believe would be a threat.
So is that one of the things you'd like people who do get to go on this trip with you maybe to put aside their preconceptions of Cuba?
Yeah, I think it destroys a lot of myths that people have. But, you know, generally, to be very honest with you, the people who go on trips with us generally go with a very open mind. They're learners. And so with that said, they don't come with preconceived notions that can't be changed. Oh, they have ideas. And, you know, what we try to do is either reinforce some of their ideas, like ours, feeling that Cuba is not a threat, or destroy some of their notions. You know, they judge for themselves. When we go, we do meet on a regular basis during the trip to discuss each day what's happened to us, what we've learned from the experience. Before we go to Cuba, we have a pre-departure seminar to prepare the people for the trip, not only in terms of what to take and what to leave at home, but also to give them information about the geography, the history, and the government of Cuba.
And what else would you like people to take away from the trips? I mean, not only just to Cuba, but all these trips that you go on.
A more open outlook on the world. I mean, every country we visit, we find out different things about different people. And that we find out the things where we're the same, similar ideas and try to understand the ideas that aren't similar.
And I think, you know, to be very honest with you, Norma and I are 80 years old. We still feel we can move. We still can do things. We don't do it as fast as we used to. But travel has not been hindering us from going abroad. And naturally, the trip is gauged to people our age. No, we don't travel in walkers or with wheelchairs for the most part. But and we get around. We had one woman on all our trips. She's 91 years old. So, you know, the age isn't significant anymore. It's on how you feel.
What has traveling together done for your relationship?
With one another?
Listen, Norma and I are going to be celebrating our 60th wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
So we've been born married. I don't think much is going to change it now.
We don't even have to talk to each other. We read minds. Learning in Retirement is operated out of the Office of Continuing Education at UWL. We couldn't do this without their support because they provide us with all the logistics, all the help that we need, our mailings, our brochures. Everything comes from the university. And so if it's a plug, yes, it's a plug for Continuing Ed because they're fabulous.
Yeah, they've done a wonderful job for us. And Learning in Retirement is a part of that office. If you are interested in becoming a member or finding out more about Learning in Retirement or Continuing Education, you can call the university at 608-785-6504 or toll-free 1-866-895-9233.
Norma and Bert Altman are involved in the Learning and Retirement Program at UW-La Crosse. They're planning to lead a trip to Cuba next year. A link to the Learning and Retirement Program is available on our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Strube, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.